This evening, Shir, we are going to talk about the usage of a watch on Shabbos. And there are a number of factors that one needs to consider when discussing wearing a watch on Shabbos. Most importantly, what you need to first figure out and differentiate is the difference between the various kinds of watches that we have. What are the potential Isurim involved? And what is the interplay between both of those questions? So let us back up a little bit and let us begin with the Isur of Hotzah on Shabbos. The Isur of Hotzah on Shabbos is that one is not allowed to carry something Dalet Amos B'Rishus HaRabim. You're not allowed to carry something four Amos in a Rishus HaRabim, or one is also not allowed to carry something from a Rishus HaYachid to a Rishus HaRabim, to transfer from one space to another halachic space. So then the Gemara discusses, well, obviously a human being is allowed to walk. That's not called carrying myself, even though obviously I'm moving from one place to another. But that is not called carrying, obviously. And then the Gemara says that anything that is tafel to the human being, anything that is a part of me, is also not considered to be carrying either. So the same way I'm allowed to walk outside and there's no prohibition of hotzah, so too, says the Gemara, I would be allowed to wear any of my normal clothing, my normal begadim, and that would not be an issue of hotzah on Shabbos. And we do not tell a person that you have to wear the bare minimum amount of clothing. We say whatever's normal for a person to wear, whatever that's considered a malbush, is not considered to be a masa. If it's a part of my clothing, it's not considered as if I am carrying it, and therefore it is permissible. Now the Gemara says we have an interesting comment. The Gemara tells us that a woman is not allowed to wear an ir shel zav. Ir shel zav means a city made out of gold. So what does it mean? What does it mean a woman is not allowed to wear a city made out of gold? And the Gemara there discusses, what exactly does it mean a woman is not allowed to wear a city made out of gold? And the Gemara there quotes three opinions in the Tanaim. One Tana says that if she violates this halacha and she wears an ir shel zav, which is like a crown that had a very beautiful, intricate design on it, made out of gold. One Tana says if she does that, she's chayiv chatas, because she has violated an iser de araisa of hotzah, because that is not allowed to be carried outside on Shabbos. That's opinion number one. Opinion number two is that it's mutter, to the other extreme. Nothing wrong at all. Why should it be wrong? The same way I'm allowed to wear clothing, so too I'm allowed to wear jewelry, and jewelry includes anything I would normally wear. So therefore, the Gemara says that opinion number two is that not only am I not chayiv chatas, it is actually heter gamur. I'm allowed to wear this ir shel zav, this beautiful piece of jewelry on my head, not a problem at all. And the middle opinion is the opinion of the chachamim. The chachamim are of the opinion that this is only an iser midrabana. Really, technically, there's no problem of hotzah because it should be similar to one wearing clothing. On the other hand, the Gemara says that the chachamim were concerned. What was their concern? Their concern was that when this woman walks in the street and she's so proud of this beautiful new piece of jewelry that she bought herself or that her husband bought for her or some other family member, that the first person that she meets on the street, she's immediately going to take it off and show it to the other individual, and thereby she will violate the Isra of Hotzah on Shabbos because it's going to exchange hands back and forth, put it back onto her head, take it off of her head, and therefore the Gemara says one is not allowed to wear an ir shel zav. One is not allowed to wear certain kinds of jewelry because it's an iser derabanan. We're concerned maybe the woman will take it off in the street and show it off to others. So some Rishonim say maybe that's only by a woman. Women are very excited about their jewelry. Men, the Rishonim say, again, they wear certain things because that's what everybody does, but they're not that excited. How often do you see a man, say the Rishonim, take off his jewelry and show it to his friend? Now, the Rishonim didn't live today. Maybe today when you have somebody who has a really fancy watch, I don't know what other kinds of jewelry men wear, they wear a bracelet, whatever it might be, a ring, maybe they go and they show it to other men also. But the assumption of the Rishonim is that the reason why the Gemara here is discussing women's jewelry is because women are the ones who are usually more excited about the jewelry that they wear. Again, it's not a blanket statement, but that's the assumption. And therefore, there's a concern that maybe when she meets up with her friend in the street, she is inadvertently going to take it off of her head and share it with her friend, show it off, and then take it back, and that would violate the Isser of Hotzah. The Gemara then says that there are other items of clothing that a woman may not wear on Shabbos outside, and those are the articles of clothing that a woman wears when she goes to be toveles in the mikvah. So it seems that there used to be a, let's say a certain braid in the hair, not a braid, a certain pony or whatever it might be, different kinds of things that women would wear specifically when they went to go to the mikvah to make it easier for them. They don't have to get totally undressed and undo everything they had. So they had certain things that made it a little bit easier. So there the Gemara says we're concerned because the whole tachlis, the whole reason to wear that is because you're going to take it off. If you're going to take it off, then you're going to violate hutzah. So therefore the Gemara says we are concerned about certain items as well. The Shmir Shabbos Kalchasa quotes that and he says today we don't have that concern. Why? Why not? Mikvah's inside. Nobody goes to the mikvah outside in the river anymore. And therefore says the Shmir Shabbos Kalchasa, even if a woman wears a certain kind of pony in her hair to hold it up when she's going to the mikvah because she doesn't want to have to do her hair and then take it apart when she gets there, that would not be a concern bizman hazeh, because even if a woman were to be going to the mikvah, the whole mikvah is indoors anyway, there's no chashash of hotzah at all. So this is a very interesting discussion. However, it trickles down to the Rishonim, and the Rishonim then wonder, I don't understand, if the Gemara is quite clear that you're not allowed to wear jewelry on Shabbos because we're concerned that maybe the woman will take it off and show it off to her friends, how do you explain the practice that we find in all of our communities, the Rishonim say, and this is a discussion in the Rif and the Ramban and other of the Gedolei HaRishonim where they say in our communities, all the women wear jewelry. So what changed? What changed from the days of the Gemara? And the Rishonim have a dispute exactly what has changed. There are some that say, nothing changed at all. But since nobody's going to listen to us, look, you're going to go tell a woman not to wear jewelry on Shabbos? No such thing. No such thing. And therefore, since we know that we're not going to be listened to, so it's better not to say anything. Because the whole thing is gzeira midrabbanan, that maybe the woman's going to take it off and violate hotzah. Okay, maybe if we're only concerned about gzeira midrabbanan, and we know that they're not going to accept what we say anyway, it's just too difficult for a woman to walk around on Shabbos in beautiful clothing but without a piece of jewelry, therefore we don't have to be concerned and we're allowed to ignore it. That's answer number one that some Rishonim give. Answer number two that some Rishonim give is, yeah, that's true in the days of the Gemara when they had a real Rishus HaRabim De'Araisa. But today, again, this is way beyond the scope of this evening's shiur, but today when we're talking about, at best, a Rishus HaRabim Midrabanan, most of our Rishuyos, even if you have a main street out here, the assumption is it's not a real Rishus HaRabim De'Araisa. If it were to be a real Rishus HaRabim De'Araisa, we wouldn't be able to have an Eruv. The whole assumption of us building an Eruv is that we're dealing with much smaller thoroughfares today. These aren't highways that we have. We don't have 600,000 people passing through here every day. All kinds of qualifications, and therefore the Gemara assumes, many Rishonim assume, that we don't have a real Rishus HaRabim Mizman HaZeh. Most of the communities that we live in do not have a real Rishus HaRabim Mizman HaZeh. And therefore, since that's what we're talking about, so the whole concern is like a double concern on top of another concern. We're concerned that a woman is going to wear jewelry and be walking in Rishus HaRabim and maybe take it off. That's concern number one, maybe you're going to take it off. But concern number two is, we don't even have a Rishus HaRabim to be concerned about. So at worst, she's going to violate an Isser D'Rabbanan of taking off jewelry in a Rishus HaYachid. Okay, you know, that's not something you have to be so concerned about, and therefore some Rishonim say, we don't really have to worry about this at all. Anyway, that's the background about general issues of jewelry on Shabbos. We see from the days of the Rishonim already that they used to wonder why women had no problem wearing jewelry when the Gemara seems to come to the conclusion that it's a problem. And whatever the answer is, we know that the minhag has become very widespread, that everybody wears jewelry, and there's nothing wrong with that at all. And the problem now becomes, how do you define jewelry? What is considered to be an essential piece of jewelry that every regular person wears? It's nothing unusual, it's something that everybody wears. What is considered jewelry that's allowed on Shabbos, and what is not? So the Mishnah Berurah in Siman Shin Aleph talks about what is the halacha with regard to hotzah when it comes to a watch. And here the Mishnah Berurah seems to say that there's a difference between different kinds of watches. So back in the days of the Mishnah Berurah, it was very common that people had pocket watches. So they had something that was attached to their button, and then they had a nice long chain, and the watch was inside of their pocket. So the Mishnah Berurah says, how would I be allowed to carry that on Shabbos? How can you say that the watch is a tachshit? How can you say that the watch is a piece of jewelry if it's not even visible? It's tucked into my pocket. Ah, says the Mishnah Berurah, maybe you'll tell me that the watch is just batel. It's something that is tafel to the chain. There's a beautiful gold chain. And now there's a watch, says the Mishnah Berurah. Who are you kidding? We all know that the watch is worth far more than the chain. So you can't say that the watch is batel to the chain and therefore it's all considered one big piece of jewelry. No! The chain might be a piece of jewelry because it's very nice. But the watch itself, says the Mishnah Berurah, should not be allowed to be worn because that is just carrying something in my pocket that is not considered a piece of jewelry at all. That is what the Mishnah Berurah writes. And he says that he's going against some other Gedolim who disagreed with him. Who is he referring to? One of the great Gedolim of the one of the previous generations was Rabbi Yosef Shaul Natanzin, who is the author of the Sefer Shaul Umeshiv, which is a very prolific writing of many, many tshuvas. And there, the Shaul Umeshiv writes, he doesn't understand what should be the problem with a pocket watch. After all, a pocket watch is the same jewelry as everything else. And the Mishnah Berurah says, no, it's not the same, because if you have a ring, or if you have a necklace, or if you have an earring, or whatever it might be, that's something that everybody can see. That's a piece of jewelry. But here, when it's tucked away in my pocket, this is something that is not to be considered jewelry at all. And Rabbi Moshe Feinstein has a tshuva about this as well, where he also takes the side of the Mishnah Berurah. The Divrei Chaim talks about it, many others, Rabbi Avadia has a long tshuva. They basically come to the conclusion that a pocket watch is something that we generally would not assume is a piece of jewelry, and therefore there would be a prohibition of wearing it on Shabbos because of a concern of Hotzah. Now again, if you live in a community where there's an Eruv, so that mitigates any of these problems. But if we're talking about a community that does not have one, that's where we have an issue. Now we get to a regular wristwatch. What's the halacha with regard to a wristwatch? And here the Achronim assume, this is what Rabbi Moshe Feinstein writes, Rabbi Avadia again, has a long tshuva about this both in the Yechave Das as well as in the Abiyah Omer. Abiyah Omer is generally a lot longer than the Yechave Das. Anybody know why? Abiyah Omer were like the real tshuvas that he wrote. Long, long. Nobody has patience to read those. My father, I remember when I was growing up, my father, every Shabbos, all he would do is read the tshuvas of Rabbi Avadia. That's what he would do every Shabbos. But he would read the real ones, the Abiyah Omer, like 20 pages long. He would go through the whole thing. And what I also know is that when my father got to Rabbi Avadia's tshuva about land for peace, and he was so upset about Rabbi Avadia's position about giving away land back to the Arabs, and he argued, not politically, he argued al pi halacha, that he thought Rabbi Avadia was totally wrong. So I remember he said, I don't know, something wrong, and that was the last time that he was learning the tshuvas on Shabbos. He's a man of principle. So he stopped. In fact, I have my father's set of Yechave Das in my house. So now something must have changed in his old age. My father's now 80 years old. So in his old age, I guess he softened up a little bit, because now we were talking on the phone the other night. He said, you know, somebody brought me a beautiful set of Sfarim, the Chazon Avadia. I'm like, Daddy, you know that's like written by Rabbi Avadia. So he said, yeah, it's beautiful. I was looking up a Shailin Hilchas Avelis. I'm like, all right, you know. So I guess he's coming back. Anyway, my father quotes Rabbi Avadia in almost every halacha shir that he gives. He quotes him, but all of that is from memory from 30-something years ago. He really has not been reading the tshuvas of the Abiyah Omer, but he holds tremendous regard of the beautiful tshuvas of Rabbi Avadia. And here, Rabbi Avadia has both tshuvas in the Yechave Das as well as in the Abiyah Omer. So why is the Yechave Das shorter? My father told me because the Yechave Das was really a radio program. People used to call into the radio, ask Rabbi Avadia all kinds of shalas, and he would answer off the cuff everything that everybody asked. If you look in the Yechave Das and you see the wide array of Mar Mekomos that he was able to shake out of his sleeve on the fly without looking anything up as people were asking him questions, you understand who Rabbi Avadia Yosef really, really was. So that's with regard to the potential Isser of Hotzah on Shabbos. I have to say, when I was at a wedding this week and they gave these out, it was great. Not sure what's going on now. It doesn't seem to be working too well. But that's with regard to watches and the Isser of Hotzah. Now we get to the additional concern that is discussed in the postgame, and that is, what about when it comes to a different consideration when it comes to watches on Shabbos? What's the other consideration? What would you say? It should be muktzah. So before we get to muktzah, the Rishonim back up a step. Again, it finds itself in Shulchan Aruch being discussed in Siman Shinches Hilchos Muktzah, which would lead one to believe that maybe this is a concern of muktzah. But really, you have to back up a little bit and understand and appreciate a little bit of what goes into the consideration before you get here. So let's see. We start with the Gemara Maseches Shabbos, where the Gemara seems to talk about something that has nothing at all to do with watches. So we begin with the Gemara in Maseches Beitza. The Gemara says there in Maseches Beitza Daf Chavtes, there are certain activities that one is allowed to do on Yom Tif, other activities that one is not allowed to do on Yom Tif. And we all know you're allowed to prepare food on Yom Tov, whereas on Shabbos, you would not be allowed to cook food. Now, the Gemara then discusses how much of the preparation am I allowed to do on Yom Tov, and how much do we assume has to be done before Yom Tov sets in, before Yom Tov begins. That is a major discussion, very detailed discussion that the Gemara has. And the Gemara, in the midst of that whole conversation, says that one is not allowed to measure or weigh the kemach, the flour, or the sa'or, which is the sa'ora, which is the barley, on Yom Tov. Why not? Why am I not allowed to measure it? If I'm making a recipe, and I want to figure out how much flour is supposed to go in, so how else am I supposed to do it? So the Gemara says you're not allowed to do it. Rashi there explains, because it looks like you are trying to sell the flour. Back then, how did the merchants sell flour? They didn't have big sacks of flour. They had a huge sack of flour in the store. Somebody came in and said he wants a pound of flour. You put in a big kli, you measured it out, and you dumped it into their vessel that they walked into the store with, and they went home. So Rashi says the Gemara's concern is that it doesn't look nice. It looks as if I'm doing business on Yom Tov. If I'm going to start measuring with a measuring cup, that's going to make it look as if I am trying to sell it. The Rambam fleshes it out a little bit more, and the Rambam says that we know that mekach u'memkar is not permissible on Shabbos. We know that one is not allowed to do business on Shabbos. Is that an issur d'oraisa, issur d'rabbanan? The Gemara says it's only an issur d'rabbanan. So what's interesting is, imagine, if Moshe Rabbeinu was keeping Shabbos, this is something Rav Asher Weiss told me many years ago, if Moshe Rabbeinu was keeping Shabbos, he would come down into our world for Shabbos Parshas Yisro, the Parsha of Kabbalah Satorah. And here we are, inviting the greatest guest of all time to our shul for Shabbos, and I have the schus of hosting Moshe Rabbeinu, and I'm watching the way he's observing Shabbos, I would think that he is definitely not an Orthodox Jew. Moshe Rabbeinu would probably be going out to the shopping center on Shabbos. Moshe Rabbeinu would not know anything about muktzah. Moshe Rabbeinu would be doing many things that none of us would do on Shabbos. And that is all because many of these were later institutions that came along after Moshe Rabbeinu's time. So there's an Isser Mekach u'Memkar that developed later in history, and that was a Takanas Chachamim. Why are we not allowed to do business on Shabbos? Says the Gemara, it's a Gzeira Shema Yichtov. We're concerned. If I'm going to do business transactions on Shabbos, maybe I'm going to mistakenly write something down, which is normally what we do when we make a transaction. We want to have some kind of proof of sale or whatever it might be. And therefore, the Gemara says we have to be concerned. Shema Yichtov. Maybe you're going to write something down in the course of doing this transaction. And because we're concerned of Shema Yichtov, which would be an Issur d'oraisa, therefore we say you're not allowed to do business at all. When the Rambam quotes that halacha of doing business on Shabbos, the Rambam adds in this halacha of not measuring something on Shabbos. So it seems similar, because when I want to measure something, I'm usually doing it for business purposes. The concern of doing that is maybe it's going to lead me to write on Shabbos, and therefore that's why the Gemara tells us that one is not allowed to measure things on Yom Tov, even though cooking on Yom Tov would be permissible. Okay? Now, why is that connected? It's not what the Gemara says. No. I don't think so. Okay, so we have a Gemara Maseches Beit Sedaf Chavtes that says you're not allowed to measure. The Gemara does not explain the reason why. Rashi explains the reason why is because it looks like Mekach u'Memkar. The Rambam says maybe Gzeira Shema Yichtov, like general business issues. Okay. Problem is, we have a Mishnah Maseches Shabbos. Mishnah Maseches Shabbos, Kufnun Zayin Amud Aleph writes, what happens, Rachmana Litzlan, if you have a dead body on Shabbos? And the dead body is in a certain room, and I happen to be in the house next door, and I happen to be a Kohen. And we know that sometimes you can have a transfer of Tumah that goes from one location to another, if there's not enough space in between, if you don't have a Tefach separating. So the Gemara says that there's a dead body in one house, and there's a Kohen family in the next house. So they come out with a tape measure on Shabbos and they start measuring, how far is my house from your house? Am I able to stay in my house for the rest of Shabbos? Do we have to move the body out? Do I have to move out? Whatever, the Gemara has a whole discussion. What do you mean? How am I allowed to measure on Shabbos? Don't we know you're not allowed to do any measuring on Shabbos? Now again, this is not the same. Measuring flour is with a measuring cup. Measuring a space is with a measuring tape. So it's the same word, but it's totally different. But the Gemara seems to say here that it's permissible, and that is a major problem. So how do you understand that? Why would that be allowed? What do you mean? I'll mark it down that this is, 6 feet right now. We measure here on Shabbos, how far is a chair allowed to be from another chair? Maybe you're going to mark it down and write, here you're allowed, here you're not allowed. That's the question. So 1 second. So why is it allowed? The Gemara wants to know. Or take for another example. Shulchan Aruch talks about a case in Siman Shin Vav. The Mechaber talks about a case. What about a mikvah? So we have a functioning community. Many people need to use the mikvah on Shabbos. Men, women, whatever it is. But obviously, the baseline, not at the same time. Men use one mikvah, women use another one. But when you have a mikvah, the baseline of what you need is obviously arbayim sa'. You need to have a mikvah that has 40 sa'. How am I going to know on Shabbos whether so much water has splashed out? Now, our mikvahs, this is never a question because we always make a mikvah that's much deeper. We don't want to have exactly. But if you have in the old European communities where they had a mikvah mitzumtzum, they didn't have as much ravchus as we have today. They didn't have the opportunity to have beautiful big mikvahs like we have. So maybe it was much closer to the arbaim sa'. So you need someone to come in and measure how much water is left on Shabbos. And the Shulchan Aruch says, I would be allowed to measure out the mikvah on Shabbos, which seems to be the same as measuring out the amount of flour that I need for a recipe. So what's the answer? So the Gemara answers. The Gemara answers there, Masech HaShabbos, the Gemara says, no, if I'm doing a medida shel mitzvah, that is going to be permissible. When does the Gemara, which is hard to explain, because the Gemara Maseches Beitza is also talking about, I'm doing it for a mitzvah of cooking on Shabbos Yantif, right? So how do you draw the line? What's good? What? Yeah. Okay. Okay, there's room to be mechalik, but it still needs a little bit of ironing out to figure out what belongs in that category of mitzvah and what does not. So for example, Tosis writes, the problem is, why am I not allowed to generally measure things on Shabbos? Tosis writes, not like Rashi. Tosis says, uvdin nechol. It's not a Shabbos activity. You're going to go start measuring with a measuring tape. It's not what we do on Shabbos. So the Prima Gadim explains, so then why is it mutter when it comes to the mikvah? Because that's not uvdin nechol. When I'm doing for the mikvah, I'm doing it for a mitzvah. When I'm measuring the house to see if the kohen has to run out of the house when there's a dead body next door, that's not uvdin nechol. I'm doing it because there's a mitzvah in my way. Everybody understands that that's self-evident why it is that I'm doing what I'm doing. So take for example, you have a case of the chole who needs to eat on Yom Kippur. So we know the halacha is somebody who has pikuach nefesh has to eat on Yom Kippur. No discussion. But if you have somebody who all they need is a little bit, so the Gemara says we try to give them pachos mikashir. Again, it's only if they're able to handle it. If the doctor has determined that that is good enough for them, that's fine. But if a doctor says they need to eat full meals on Yom Kippur, so they eat full meals. So here, the Sefer Achinuch writes in Mitzvah Shin Yud Gimel, what happens when I have a chole on Yom Kippur who needs to eat pachos mikashir? That means I have to sit there and measure out how much water I'm going to drink. Writes the Sefer Achinuch, not a problem. That's a medida shel mitzvah. Why is it a medida shel mitzvah? Because the Mishnah Berurah explains, number one, I would rather not eat and violate an Isser of Kares on Yom Kippur than maybe potentially violate the Isser of Midirabbanan of Medida on Shabbos Yantif. So that's number one. But number two, more fundamentally, says the Mishnah Berurah, it's a Medida Shal Mitzvah. I'm doing this because I want to know exactly how I should eat on Yom Kippur. Or take, for example, Rabbi Avadia has a tshuva where he discusses some people come to the Seder with all of their shiurim, right? They have cups and they have these pieces of plastic where they measure. I've never actually seen anybody who does it. I've heard about people who do it. Never seen anyone who actually does it, but I've heard that people come with a whole mat and it has different sizes and who's going to eat what and how much they're going to eat, how much matzah, how much maror. And yeah, we shouldn't laugh. There are some people, my father told me, some people who do it, it's because they have a medical condition. They're only allowed to eat a certain amount of matzah, a certain amount of maror, whatever it is. They have some kind of physical problem. So again, if the doctor allows them to eat a certain amount and they need to know what is the minimal shear, my father told me Rabbi Schwab had a medical condition and he was never able to eat bread or matzah. He made a small exception on Leil HaSeder. The first night of Pesach, when Achilas matzahs daraisa, he ate a little bit more than he ate on the second night when it's only midirabbanan. So again, there are people who have to make very serious calculations, not just a joke when they come with all these measuring sticks and measuring cups to figure out how much they should eat or drink. So in such a case, Rabbi Avadya writes, that would not be a concern of usur limdod on Shabbos, that it's usur to measure something. What do you mean? That's a medida shel mitzvah. I'm doing it because I want to know exactly how I'm able to fulfill my mitzvah, matzah and marah and all the different things that I need to do on the holiday of Pesach or on the Yom Tif of Yom HaKippurim. I need to know how much I'm allowed to eat, how much I'm not allowed to eat. That would be permissible. There's no problem of uvdin nechol, no problem of mekach u'memker. Which leads us to a contemporary shaila, which was discussed very much during COVID, and that is, am I allowed to take someone's temperature on Shabbos or Yom Tif? Now again, many of our thermometers today are electric thermometers, and therefore there's a whole slew of other concerns. But let's say I'm talking about the age-old thermometers, or the way they used to do it, right? When he took somebody's temperature and something changed colors or whatever it might be, is that considered to be a problem of measuring something on Shabbos or Yom Tov? And that is a major discussion in the contemporary Svarim. Most of them argue that since we know in Shulchan Aruch that taking care of a chola on Shabbos is considered to be a mitzvah, it's not just that we say, find a guy to do it. No. If I have to take care of a chola on Shabbos, I take care of the chola. Even though I'm a Jew who's keeping Shabbos, that's what I'm supposed to do. So they say, this would then be considered to be a medida shel mitzvah. The same way that I'm allowed to care for a chola, that means I'm allowed to take his temperature if that's what it calls for. And therefore, that would be permissible. What does this have anything to do with watches? Very good question. This wasn't all just a major distraction. So now we get to watches. The Maharil was one of the Chachmei Ashkenaz. And the Maharil has a discussion. Well, what would you think about using something that keeps the measure of time on Shabbos? So this is like a major stretch from measuring. But I think when you know the background, it makes it far more interesting. So the Maharil, as quoted in Shulchan Aruch, says, what do we do about something that measures time? Now, the Maharil is not describing our watches. The Maharil is describing an hourglass. An hourglass where you turn it over and the sand actually goes down. So let's see. Let's look in Shulchan Aruch, Simen Shin Ches, Seif Nun Aleph, where the Maharil is quoted. And he says, Ma Shemore Al Hasho'os. Doesn't even call it a watch. He says, you have this kind of instrument that tells us something about the hours. Shekorin, I don't even know what you call that. Bein shehu shel chol, bein shehu min acher, whether it's made out of sand, an hourglass, that's what it is. Or if it's made of some other substance, yesh lehistapek im mutter letaltolo. Writes the Maharil, I'm not sure whether or not you're allowed to carry that on Shabbos. Why not? Why not? Because if you're not allowed to use it on Shabbos because it is measuring time, so then the conclusion is going to be that it's therefore muktzah, because it has no purpose on Shabbos. So this is the discussion that the Maharil has, and writes the Rama, Ukvar Pashat Haminig Lesser. Says the Rama, you're not allowed to use a watch on Shabbos. Why? Because that is considered to be a measuring instrument. Fascinating! Since it's a measuring instrument, and it reminds us of all the other discussions that the Gemara has about not measuring this, not measuring that, therefore, I'm not allowed to use a watch on Shabbos, because it's going to be muktzah, because it has no purpose, because I'm not allowed to use it on Shabbos. Fascinating. Fascinating. So that's what the Mechaber on the Ramah writes, the Mishnah Berurah, excuse me, have you ever walked outside on Shabbos? Have you ever walked inside on Shabbos? You've never seen anybody wear a watch? This is simply not the case. We all know that everybody wears watches. Again, whether you wear a watch outside, a whole shaila of Hotzah, yes, no, forget Hotzah. We're talking about a community that has an Eruv. Or we're talking about inside of the house, right? So Mishnah Berurah, what are you talking about? A watch is Muktzah? How can a watch be Muktzah? Well, right? So Mishnah Berurah, well, if you look in Shulchan Aruch, it's quite clear that a watch is not permissible on Shabbos. It's considered to be Muktzah because it's a measuring instrument. To which the Mishnah Berurah is trying to figure out what's the difference. And he says, no, our watches are much different than their watches. How are they different? So we look in Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach in his Sefer Me'orei Ha'esh. On the side of the Dirshu Mishnah Berurah, they quote this. And let's read it in full. Amnam nir la'anias daiti. Here, Moshe is trying to explain what is the crux of the difference between the age-old watches that the Mechaber and the Rambam are describing from the Maharil, and the watches in the days of the Mishnah Berurah. Writes Reb Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, L'anias da'iti nira dein lachush lazeh, the time of the Asru Chachamim medidos and mishkalos b'Shabbos v'yamtiv. Why did Chazal say you're not allowed to measure things on Shabbos v'yamtiv? It's because mishum uvdin d'chol. V'nira de'lo shayach tamzeh ki im be'elu ha'medidos v'ha'mishkalos sh'al pi harov oskim b'hem b'mei achol. That only applies to something that you only do specifically during the week. Meaning, I usually measure out my flour during the week to sell it to another person. But I don't only use my watch during the week for certain purposes. Writes Reb Shlomo Zalman, B'shas mekach u'memkar shar masu matun shecholach hayotzebem. However, he says, and the Mishnah Berurah explains this a little bit, in the times of the Maharil, what did they use the hourglass for? You had a pharmacist who was making all kinds of potions, he was making all kinds of ingredients, putting them together, cooking them a little bit. So he used his watch in order to make the proper ingredient and keep it on the fire for the exact amount of time. How long does he need to crush it for? How long does he need to mix it for? All these things are what watches used to be used for. They weren't as precise. You know, it's very difficult because when you talk about certain zmanim in halacha, if you look in the times of the Gemara, there was no precision like we have it today. So it's very hard to really get a handle on what is the precise answer that we're looking for. How do you define precision in halacha when the halacha itself in the original source didn't have precision? So in the times of the Gemara, you were 5 minutes earlier, 5 minutes later, you know, people weren't as medactic as they are today. But over here, right, so Mishnah Berurah, when did they have to make sure that everything was exactly to the minute when I was mixing up all of the ingredients to make a medication and I had to make sure it was on the fire only this amount of minutes? That's when I used it. That is uvdin l'chol. But says Reb Shlomo Zalman, today, when I use my watch, not because I'm doing malacha, I use the watch because I want to have a structure to my day, I want to know what time it is, I want to know where I'm going next, what time is my next meeting, how much time do I have for lunch, how much time for dinner, when should my kids go to bed. When that's the reason why I have a watch, that's not uvdin l'chol, that's just regular routine of life. And therefore he says, that would not be an issue at all. And that is generally, yeah. So that leads us right to our next point. And that is, well, number one, what happens when you have an hourglass for a child's game? Right? Many children's games still use an hourglass. So what do you do about that? That's a very big shaila. The Shemir Shabbos Kilchasa talks about it. It's not so clear. If you look in the Mishnah Berurah here is saying, our watches are different than an hourglass. Yeah, but there are many games today that still use an hourglass. So you have to think about that question, whether or not that's going to be an issue. Normally, it's kids playing with it. Okay. Right, correct. You're doing something. Okay, so we're going to have to talk about that in a second. What about the watches that you have to initiate as well? So let's see. Number one, what about a watch which is a digital watch? So let's think about the watches that we all wore 25 years ago. Yes, I was born 25 years ago. There were watches 25 years ago where you used to press a button on the side and a light would turn on. That was like the coolest watch you can imagine. Remember those? So, what? Yeah, that's right. So, Rav Moshe has a fascinating tshuva. Rav Moshe is in one of the later volumes in Or HaChaim because they didn't have these fancy watches in the 1950s. They had them in the 1980s and 90s. So what happens when you have these fancy watches that you could turn a light on in the watch? You could see what time it is. Amazing. Before they came up with glow-in-the-dark hands. So in such a case, Rav Moshe says, well, let's think back to Hilchos Bishul B'Shabbos. Hilchos Bishul B'Shabbos, one of the halachos is you have to cover over the flame. Why? Shamiachata, we're concerned, maybe you're going to start stoking the coals, playing around with it, and then you're going to violate an iser. Says Rav Moshe, maybe you need a blech on your watch. Sounds like a silly question, but it makes a lot of sense. Maybe I need a blech on my watch. Same way I have to cover over with silver foil the knobs on my oven or the fire, whatever I have to cover over, something. So maybe I have to have a blech on top of my watch also. And for that matter, says Rav Moshe, maybe every light switch in my house I have to go and cover over. Which is a nice thing to do anyway. They make these fancy things today. It's a good thing to do if you have little kids for sure. but even not little kids. So is that something that we're obligated to do? So Rav Moshe discusses it here. Chelek Hei in Tshuvas Igros Moshe, where he writes, the answer is, no, it's not a problem. Why is it not a problem? The kol din heker shehusker b'gemara, hu davka be'esh atzma. The whole takana of Chazal of covering over a flame is only when it's the flame itself. What are you going to go around my house and tell me that every single item that maybe can lead me to do something else, I have to go put a blech? I have to put a blech over my hands because maybe my hands, I don't know, it's crazy. Ain't the davar sof. Says Rav Moshe, no. When Chazal said you need a blech, that's only by an open flame. That was in the times of Chazal, that's where they saw it necessary to make a takana. Rav Moshe says there's no reason to extend it further. And therefore says Rav Moshe that, in his opinion, he felt that even though you are able to wear this kind of watch on Shabbos and you don't have to wear a blech, he says you should try to be careful to make sure that you don't make a mistake and turn it on over the course of Shabbos. So now, let's move on to the fancy, much fancier watches that we have today. Let's say a Fitbit or an Apple Watch or a smartwatch, one of those things. So what's the halacha there? What do you say? So that's a major problem. A lot of the smartwatches today activate based on our movements, and it displays automatically every time I move my body. It takes a accounting of, I don't even know what it's called, but my heart rate and my steps and everything. I think accelerometer, something like that. Right? It keeps track of all of my body functions, all my body movements. Who knows what Uncle Sam is looking at also in my phone, but all kinds of things are being recorded. And that's the question, what is the status of doing that on Shabbos? So Rav Asher Weiss often likes to talk about such devices. And he says that Me'ikar Adin, if you have something that is recording and you want it to record, so that's a problem. Of course it's a problem. You're not allowed to do that. It's a malacha. If you have something that, let's say, I turn off the screen and I don't care that it records, meaning it's not like I check up after Shabbos and I'm interested in the information that it recorded. I couldn't care less. So in a case like that, he argues that maybe Me'ikar Adin, it's mutter to do such a thing. Maybe. Again, it's a tremendous chiddush of his that most don't agree to. But it's something that he proposes we should consider. However, he writes that in his opinion, he still feels this is a tremendous zilzal Shabbos. Someone's going to be walking around the whole Shabbos with the Apple Watch. Either the screen is on or off, whether they're going to look at the thing or not. It's not a Shabbos thing to wear. You're walking around with a computer on your arm. And therefore, he says that he thinks that it's something that even though Me'ikar Adin might be permissible based on the mechanics, the electronics of it, but even so, leaving that aside, number one, most people who are going to wear it are not going to turn off all the features, and they're not going to make sure to deactivate everything that's going to be automatically done as they're walking around, they're moving. Number two, he says that this is something that clearly is a Zilzal Shabbos and something we need to be careful about. What about somebody who has a mechanical watch? Most people don't have these today, but my understanding is those are the very, very fancy watches, are often mechanical watches. So mechanical watch is also a big shaila. Some of them are automatic, and some of them are manual, right? Now, if you have a watch with a battery, it runs on its own. If you have a mechanical watch, that's something that you need to very strongly think about. So if you look in the Shmir Shabbos Kilchasa, he writes, Sha'on Mekani, if I have a mechanical watch, Asur L'Konon B'Shabbos, if it is a manual mechanical watch, and I have to go and turn the dial in order for it to function for the next couple of hours, I'm not allowed to do that. Why? Because that is tikkun kli. That's mesakin mana. Of course I'm not allowed to do that. So the Shmir Shabbos Kilchasa says, Ve'ein lekonono gam b'shah shah sha'on pa'ol. Maybe you'll argue, once the watch is already going, so once it's going, I'm allowed to get it to go for the next few hours. Says the Shmir Shabbos Kilchasa, I don't understand why that would be permissible. So, Reb Shlomo Zalman Auerbach says, if you have a watch that as I move around, maybe it's going to be able to activate the next couple of hours. So Shlomo Zalman Auerbach says, maybe there's room to say that as long as when Shabbos started, my watch was usable and was able to tell time. So now, maybe I should assume that this would be something that that I'm allowed to continue walking around with. Again, not if I have to turn the dial itself. That's real Masakin Mana. But if just by virtue of the fact that I'm moving around, that's going to help it, so maybe that's the same. Again, this is something that's a very interesting part of the discussion, and it's something we need to think about. And I'm going to leave you with one final thought that I'm not quite sure that I fully understand what the connection is, but it's something to consider. I don't think I understand it fully. But Rav Vozner writes in a tshuva in the Chutz Shani where he says that maybe when you have a toy car of a child, that when you wind it up, it goes. So he said maybe that's the same question as this automatic watch that has to run mechanically. A mechanical watch that I have to actually mechanically move. So the same way that that's Masakin Mana, he argues maybe this should also be Masakin Mana and we shouldn't be allowed to play with such toys on Shabbos. I don't know what the connection is. When it comes to a watch, I mean, maybe I'm missing something, but you can see it inside. When it comes to a watch, if I don't wind it up, it's not going to work. So that is Masakin Mana. It's Tikkun Kli. I'm making it work. By the car, it works with my winding it up or not. It happens to be it's a much more exciting experience when you wind it up and it goes really quickly. But again, I don't know how well-versed everybody is in the mechanics of little cars, but I'm often on the floor with little cars and it's very exciting. So it could be exciting even when you roll it without winding it up. It could be even more exciting if you roll it up. That's not Tikkun Mana. It's just another feature that you have in the car. Not sure what the connection is, just because both of them happen to have something sticking out that winds. I don't know what the connection is between the two things. But anyway, something for us to think about. And Mirtz Hashem, next week we will continue with